it's good to see you all this morning. We're heading out to Maine this afternoon, so I'll see you in about a week and a half, I guess. So,
yeah.
I'll miss you, but I'm glad I'm going to Maine. I love Maine. Good for the art, great for the family. So, almost all the things that have happened, Matthew's on his way up. We'll pick up Lydia, and Erica's going to meet us there, too. So, should be a great trip. We had a very good class last Wednesday. It was probably one of the best classes we've had. I know sometimes I say, you know, is this the adult class? It's really just meant to challenge us, you know, like, you know, let's focus, let's do our best. And but that Wednesday, that was really a good class. So I really appreciate the participation and the thoughtful comments. We started James last class, got around to about verse 11 or 12. Lots of things to talk about, many things to review. So thank you, Robert, for taking the class on Wednesday and the following Sunday. And Robert can do whatever he prefers, whether it be following on with James or separate lessons. He'll decide that, but thank you, Robert, for doing that. We read here in the first chapter there, a common verse for all of us, but my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. We talked about that. We talked about the idea of the one that is the doubter, their life is like a wave driven to and fro by the wind. Also, that man is double-minded, unstable in all their ways. So, in the first part, we talk about trials. We talk about our relationship to the trials, the benefits of those trials, and also the things that we know are not going to help us on our way. We need to be single-minded, not double-minded. We need to focus on the Lord, even during trials. And then the last few verses there, we talked about a little bit, let that lowly brother glory in exaltation and the rich in humiliation. Some good comments on that. And then we'll start with 12 today. It says, blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. We read that, talked about the idea of, some versions say endure, some say persevere. So part of the thing that we have to do, and this is part of Brian's lesson, actually a big part of the lesson, is we have to continue to endure, knowing that we're serving the Lord, that we serve Jesus, that we're trying to be an example to other people, and he is our example that we follow. Verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Any thoughts and comments on those verses there, 12 through 16?
You're going to be tempted.
Yeah. We're going to be tempted.
You're alive and human.
Yeah.
You're going to be tempted.
Yeah. Who brings the temptation?
Satan.
Yeah. Right?
He even said to Jesus.
Sure. Some people want to put the Lord on that, don't they? They want to say, God tempted me. He doesn't tempt us. Just sit right here. Just read the verse, right?
Well, they blame God because, say, God made the physical body and it has this inherent with it.
Sure.
So it's God's fault.
Sure.
And that's why they excuse themselves of doing what they want to do.
Well, that's the pattern, isn't it? You know, suspend the truth and do the thing that you want to do. Surely, that's what the word says here. It says, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. Now, we have tests in life, trials in life, right? We might think of Abraham. You know, there's trials, there's challenges. We have those, right? And we learn from those things. Those are things that we can be benefited by. But God is not out there tempting us to do something that we shouldn't do. But it says, each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Important word there is what? His. His own desires, right? We're not drawn away by somebody else's this and that. Now, we might be reacting to somebody, but ultimately it's our responsibility, isn't it? See, that's the thing. This requires our responsibility. He is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So it's kind of a sequence there, right? There's that tempted thing, then there's this drawing away, and then it says, and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. Some versions there say in 15, full grown. Some versions say, have run its course, right? So this process has run its course. The process of the temptation has drawn away, has enticed, is fully grown, it has run its course. What is the byproduct of all this? 15. It brings forth what?
Death,
right? Separation from God, right? That's what sin does. What do you learn from that? What kind of things can we learn from those verses there? Ever been in a situation where you saw a circumstance and you thought, that's not a place I want to be? Right? Your instincts say, that's not a place I want to be. They are, right? Sometimes you might, as you enter a situation, think, this might be fine, and then you realize this is not fine. So what do? You extricate yourself, right? You don't hang around thinking, well, it might get better. Sandy?
Satan is the tempter and father of lies, but let's not overcredit here. He is the tempter, no doubt, but in context, we are our own fault here.
Yeah.
It says that we entertain the lust in our heart,
yeah.
Grow it, consider it, its conception takes place in our own hearts, and that's on us.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you said there, because as you said that, I thought, that takes some time, doesn't it? This whole thing takes some time. This sequence of events, right? The temptation, the enticement, the self-deception. These things take time. Our reaction, Gerald.
So you recognize that? Remember the word avoid we all talked about?
Yeah, right. Very good. Very good. Very good. You know, and many times too, you think about, you know, this is why it's great to study God's word, to have His word embedded in your heart and your mind. Is you are very alert of situations, right? You're watchful. Jeanette?
Well, it also says to flee from it. Not just avoid it. Flee from it.
Right.
This is like a alcoholic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, they think in their earlier, you know, when they're trying to get better.
Right.
They're trying to avoid booze and stuff. But they said, oh, well, I can still go to a bar. I'll mm-hmm. just drink some 7-Up.
Right.
No. Flee from that.
Right.
See,
right.
That, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sin, you know, and I know
sure.
that, but
yeah.
I'm just saying about the.
Yeah, I've heard about people who had a smoking problem. They started to stop smoking, but they might have played like had a game night at their house or something, or they went and played cards somewhere or did some kind of activity, and in that place there was smoking, right? So they're doing good, but then the activity, the environment, here we are again, right? So it's important, as you said, extricate yourself, you know, exit the situation. He says, but don't be deceived, my brethren, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. I'll do a little drawing for you. A little one. Not a big one. Here are the peppers. You got a pepper. Okay. The light's from the left. Cashew to the what? To the right. Okay. That cast shadow will move in time. As time changes, the shadow changes. It gets more vertical, the shadow gets smaller. I taught this to people. It's a kind of crazy thing to teach, right? Shadow gets lower. The light gets lower, shadow gets longer. Okay? Let's talk about shadow. It says, every good gift and every perfect is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. See, that doesn't, when we're talking about God here, it's constant. It's not shifting. Some versions will say shifting, a shifting shadow, right? There's no change, it's constant. That's interesting. It's like a visual way to think about it. Like when you think about things that are apparent to you, and over time they change, aging, whatever that might be, right? Some things never change. In our lives, it seems like everything changes, but God does not change. So that's why it is. He says, the Father of lights. Isn't that beautiful language? Really love Father of lights. Go to 1 John 1. 1 John. 1 John 1, verse 5. This is the message which we have heard from Him and declare to you, that God is light and in Him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with Him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. Goes right back to our verses right there. Yes, Brian.
Yeah, like I said, the language is beautiful, Father of lights. You're talking about God is the light. He is light. He's the one who created what we think of as the light.
Right.
Right? So
right.
The sun, the stars.
Yes.
This is the person who created it. It's a truer light that doesn't shift like the lights that he created does.
Perfect.
He's the father of light.
That's right.
And lights, but he's one that is always on and doesn't shift.
Yeah. And that's just a, it's poetic in a way, right? It's the poetry of the word is just so beautiful. In Psalm 147, verse 4 and 5 says, "He counts the number of stars. He calls them all by name. Great is our Lord, and mighty His power. His understanding is infinite." Isn't that wonderful? There's the power. It's constant. He calls the stars by name. Duncan and I were just talking about, you know, when you're trying to evangelize, you're trying to talk to people, help people along with faith and scriptural understanding. And sometimes it gets a little frustrating or it can be a little bit difficult because you don't see them responding, right? This kind of verse helps all of us because we're pretty small, right? We're pretty small. And this verse just teaches us how the majesty of God. Great is our Lord and mighty in power. His understanding is infinite. We don't have that. We have a finite understanding, right? He has an infinite understanding. So it's helpful for us to think when we study His Word, it is eternal words. You know, these are eternal words. We live by them today. Yes, they're eternal words. He says in 18, of His own will, He brought us forth by the word of truth that we might be a kind of first fruits of His creatures. What's the word first fruits mean? Anybody know that? If you look it up in Strong's, I think it's number 536. How's that? It's the beginning of sacrifice. That's what it says. A beginning of sacrifice. So if we're the first fruits, what's that supposed to be for us? What do we take away from that? Is it important? Are we important in that role, right? Yeah. So obviously, you think about in the Old Testament, you know, you'd give that perfect animal, right? You wouldn't give the blemished animal, right? We're the first fruits. So we have to be the best we can be holy people, be godly people, and that means we have to remove ourselves from anything that would discredit us, that would blemish us, and that's what he's getting at here. Of his own will, he brought us in forth by the word of truth, that we might be kind of first fruits of his creatures. So then, this is 19, my beloved brethren, let every man, we've read this a lot, I want to focus on one part of this, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. What does it mean? What does it take to be quick to hear? What does that take?
Humility.
You got it. That's the answer. It takes a humble person to do that. What kind of attitude do we have if we are inclining our ear? This is the Old Testament language, right? If we're inclining our ear to the Lord, what are we doing? We're being thoughtful, right? We're being prayerful. We're being humble, right? We want to hear the word, not just to hear it. We want to hear it to do what? To obey the word, right? So this connects to the next verses, obviously, right? He says, be swift to hear, okay? So like an urgency. Someone's talking to you, your brother, sister's talking to you, right? You want to like really hear it, right? Listen to it. Not just sort of like the TV's on in the other room. Yeah, I'm not hearing anything. So you got to be attentive, right? The person who is quick to hear is humble and attentive to what's being said. It says slow to speak. What does that demonstrate? I think Zinger talked about that in his lesson today, right? Patience, right? Is it difficult sometimes to be slow to speak? Let's say you have a really strong opinion about something. Let's say someone said something that you know is not scripturally right. Right? You're going to say something to make that correction, right? How do you do that? You're going to let them finish the sentence and then say it? Sometimes we might want to talk before it's even over, before they've even finished the sentence, right? Let them speak and then we can speak, right? Also, you think about just like for unity as Christians, right? When we get together, we're out in the parking lot, you know, we're between class and worship, right? When we talk to each other, how should we be doing that? In what? In love, right? We should love the brethren, right? That's asked of us. We're happy to oblige in that, right? He says, be swift to hear, slow to speak. Also, if I'm slow to speak, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say. I'm not being hasty, right? Sometimes we want to say something in a reaction to something before it's even happened, right? Sometimes people want to give you their whole life story, you know? Hey, how are you this morning? And they're talking on and on. You're like, oh, I'm doing good. Hope you're doing good. Right? Let them go ahead and talk. Hear them out. Hopefully, you know, a brother and sister is not going to give you the history of the church here in 5 minutes. Right? Like, let's just talk about the things that we need to talk about that are relevant for today. And that is relevant. But let's be careful about how we talk to each other. That's the important part here. Because we're going to be, if we're slow to speak, then we're being patient in that. We're showing humility in that, just as we were in terms of how we're hearing things. And lastly, slow to wrath. Sandy, you got a quick comment there?
No, I'm stuck on 18. I'm being slow to read.
There you go. How about slow to wrath? Yeah. Has anyone felt like they've grown in that over time? Maybe before you obeyed the gospel. Maybe when you were a younger Christian. Maybe that was there for you a little bit. Some anger, right? Maybe now you've gotten better at that. Yes. Kathleen.
My response was the fact that if you're slow with your tongue,
yeah,
and you leave it, God's wrath will take care of it. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to be saying is that it demonstrates a lot of righteousness that you have within God.
Okay,
God.
Good.
When you
good.
Decide that you're going to just hold your tongue. Because sometimes you have a response that may be necessary, but it needs to just be
right.
Tongue held in so that you can listen to the whole thing that they're trying to do.
Right, right. Don't get sped up, basically, right? Don't speed up. For instance, let's say something was very important to say and you needed to say it. And you know it's important to say. It might be, you know, a spiritual matter, right? You would think about that before you actually started talking. You might think about not planning it all out, but in a way thinking about what's the best way to say this? How do I do this in a way that's loving, caring, but also maybe correcting? That takes a little, some thought, right? So if you are doing what you said there, Kathleen, right, you would be demonstrating patience in this throughout the process here. He says, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Straightforward, right? I mean, if we are angry, if we are like wrathful, right, what are we not doing then? What are we spending our time on? What kind of reaction is that? It's an emotional reaction, right? It's an emotional reaction. Nothing wrong with emotional reactions. But they have to be what? Galatians 5. You got self-control. You got to demonstrate self-control. So if you demonstrate self-control, this is not going to happen. So to have this happen, you would be, I think, in a way, lacking some self-control. In all those qualities, swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Any comments on that? Kathleen?
When we don't demonstrate those things, we're not glorifying God. When we retaliate, right after somebody has said something, we're boom, right there, blasting at them. That's not glorifying God at all.
Right.
Sure.
Murph.
It's interesting that he brings this up here and everything, and yet he's going to talk about it more in chapter 4.
Yeah.
Because apparently he wouldn't have brought it up if he wasn't a problem.
Right. Right. I mean, the whole section on the tongue, right? The whole section on the tongue, chapter 3 and 4, keep on going, right? Like, it's important. It's important that there's control, that we have control, that we can bridle the tongue to be godly people, to be effective teachers, to spread the gospel in a way that's going to be effective. He says, therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. So there you have it, right? The attitude needs to be a meek attitude, a humble attitude. That way we are that word, the implanted word is in us. It stays within us. We live the word. We understand the word, right? Which is able to save your souls. We have to lay aside some things. Murph, go ahead.
Which in this context means that James is saying, listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You save your soul.
Yeah. That's pretty critical. I mean, that if you said that, okay, I'm listening to you. I'll be inclining my ear to hear how to save my soul. Gerald, do you have something there?
Yeah, the wrath of man is where we were.
Yeah.
He goes on, he says, he brought us forth by the word of truth, by his will.
Uh-huh.
Now it says, now for a layer beside these things, the wrath of man is where we were.
Right.
Now we're focusing on bringing God glory instead of ourselves.
That's right.
It's a change.
It's a change, right? And of course, you know, as we talked about in the first class, right? This letter, some folks think it's primarily to Jewish Christians. It's to Christians. We know that part. So he's speaking to people who should know the word, should be living the word. But these are qualities. These are characteristics. There's our conduct. It's also like internal, right? He says, "Be doers of the word and not hearers only." Okay. Now you can say that to the whole congregation, but what would we do individually? We would take that in, wouldn't we? We'd ask ourselves the question, am I just hearing or am I doing something, right? Who are the people that are hearers only? That's the question I have for you today. Who are people who are hearers only? What are they doing?
Not doing.
They're not doing. Now, is hearing doing something? That's a philosophical thing. But like if you think about it, the activity is action. It's doing, okay? Hearing is an activity, and you have to be an active learner. Active listener, right? But it says, if you're just listening to things, and that's it, what is the value of what you heard, right? If we came here every Sunday, heard a good lesson, hopefully attended a good class, right? And we learned some things, but never applied them. Yes, Catherine.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have to, like, practice these things, because even if, we may be better at patience and being slower at than we used to be. But it's something we have to continually work on, because whenever something frustrating comes up, you have the opportunity to respond to it in a multitude of ways.
Yeah.
So we have to, in all of those moments, be really intentional about practicing to be slow to wrath.
Yeah. And you know, it's one thing that might be good to do sometimes is reflect a little bit after that circumstance and say, you know what? I have done a little bit better. I thought about it. I tried a little harder. I went through the normal process I went through, but I was patient with it. I did not rush to say something. Did not rush to react to something. That's growth, right? It takes reflection, though. And I think you're right. Absolutely right, Catherine. Not only does it take some time to develop it, but then you have to like reflect on it and say, am I really doing what I'm being asked to do here, right? Not being just a hearer, deceiving yourselves. I have a lot of students in class. They're in class every day. Perfect attendance. Poor students. It's okay. You could be there every day and not be a good student. I had a student in St. John's. He sat as far away from me as he could. 8 o'clock in the morning, lecture class, about maybe 90 people in the class. I don't remember. It was an art history class. I had no business teaching the class, to be honest with you. Not an art historian, but this guy was way in the back. Too big a class to even take attendance. And he was there every time. Because I look at the door when it hit at 8 o'clock. Okay, class is going to start. There he was, right by the door. One of the best students in the class. Far and away one of the best students in the class. Didn't say 5 words to me all semester. Had to call him up. I said, yo, you're a good student. You know what's weird? He had 3 friends in the hallway waiting for him. So I said, you know, you're a really good student. You know, you should really do well here. So I leave when he leaves, and I hear one of his friends say to him, "What are you? Just trying to be like, you know, kind of Mr. Goody Two Shoes. You're trying to be just a good guy. You're trying to be a good student." I'm like, "Wow! Imagine getting pressure for being a good student." Whoa! So back to the point, right? We can be here. We can hear things every time, but if we're not doing something, it's right here in front of us. Okay. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing the natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, immediately forgets what kind of man he was. What does the mirror do?
Reflect.
Does mirror lie? Mirror doesn't lie. Mirror's not lying, right? Yeah. So you look at the mirror, it's not lying to you. Okay? But what happens to this person? He looks and does what? He forgets. How do you forget that? My mind's not right. You can glance at something, or you can really look at something. I mean, glancing is one thing. You look at something, what are you doing? I'm intently looking at it, right? Yeah, I'm studying it. If I look at myself in the mirror, which I do, what kind of man am I? That's the question. What kind of man am I? That's the question. For he observes himself, goes away, immediately forgets what kind of man he was. That's crazy. That shows you like laziness. It's like a lazy mind. Okay? But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not forgetful here, but a doer of the work, this one will be what? He'll be blessed. He'll be blessed in what he does. The difference is pretty simple. The difference is pretty simple, isn't it? What does one do that the other one doesn't do? Application. Application in life, right? You've heard that phrase, a faithful life, living faithfully. That's what this is, right? If we're in the Word, we're studying the Word, it's absolutely true, and we live a life true to it, well, there we're going to be in a good situation. This one will be blessed in what he does. 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one in religion is what?
Useless.
Whoa. Because someone can't bridle their tongue? That's how important it is.
That's big.
That is big. I think I asked this question, you know, a few months ago in a different class, right? If you think about people who may attend a service and never return, I don't think it's the doctrine. I don't think it's just that. It could be some interaction, something that was said, something that was asked, right? We got to think about what we're doing, right? I showed up in 1999, 2000. I got 40 questions 3 days in a row. I'm happy to answer your questions. Not really. I really wasn't happy to answer all the questions. Why are the questions coming? But thankfully, we're here to seek God, right? So we can overcome that. But some people have a difficult time overcoming that. They're like, what is going on? So that's what we get back to here. If anyone thinks he is religious, okay, that's part of it, and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. The heart is everything for us, right? God sees the heart. God knows the heart, right? We can't fool ourselves. We can't look in the mirror and say it's not true. The mirror is true. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. How does God feel about orphans and widows? Brian, you go first.
I just see this as an example of this hearer doer.
Yeah.
It's like, you all need to bridle your tongues. Here's something you can do. This obviously was a problem, more of a problem, but maybe not the
sure, right? Societal.
Certainly societal.
Yeah.
More intentional there of something good that they can spend their time doing.
Yeah.
That is true looking into the law, the perfect law of freedom. And preserving it.
Yeah.
By doing this sort of thing, which God cares about.
Sure.
Deeply.
When you think of orphans and widows, do you think people who are in need? There may be a need, right? There may not be a need, but should we ask about the need or hope that we can help in some way? Absolutely. So that's the thing there. And you're right, Brian. He says, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, right? And to keep oneself unspotted from the world. So we're doing two things at one time. One benefits the other. As we help someone do a good work, help someone live an upright life, help someone be a good example, what's our benefit? Right there, it says it. You keep yourself unspotted from the world. How about that? 30 minutes on the dot. Kathleen.
Apparently in that particular culture, the widows and the orphans were the most unprotected.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Sure.
Because in this society, you know, there's places, there's
Social Security.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. Out there that are helping
us. Sure, Murph.
And the word visit doesn't mean, hey, how do you doing?
What's it mean?
It refers to the idea of looking in to see what the
need
is.
Yeah, looking after, taking care of.
So,
yes.
So it's not a casual thing where you just say, I'll just stop by and see social today.
Right.
I stop by and look and see what
exactly.
Today.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, come visit me sometime now. All right. I will see you in about a week and change. Have a great week. Thank you.